my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host and very good friend is Dave.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, we are going back to the year I was born, 1978, and this one stars Clint Eastwood, Sandra Locke, and Jeffrey Lewis. Oh, and the wonderful Beverly D'Angelo, which I loved in National Lampoon's. And this one is Every Which Way But Loose, my friend. Now, I know this is a classic, and it's been played over and over on the UK TV screens, but do you remember anything about when you first saw this one, Dave?
I don't remember seeing it for the first time, but I definitely remember watching it a lot at my nan's. So I'm sure I've said it to you before, but I remember watching this one, the sequel as well, Any Which Way You Can, Convoy, you know, this kind of redneck comedy action movie was just in my wheelhouse, you know, in those early 80s times. So yeah, like I said to you last week, in my memory, I was watching Star Wars and Superman all the time. But actually, when I go back, films like this, I forget I've watched over and over again. However, Chris, I have to say, I remember this a little bit wrongly because I think way more happens than actually does, right? And I think in my hazy memory, I'm remembering the second one and this one together. Because I'm remembering a lot of things like Right Turn Clyde and, you know, Clyde having a bit of a scrap with the bikers and stuff. I'm remembering things like this from this movie. And it's like, oh, wait, no, they're not in this one. They're in the second one. But yeah, I've watched this lots and lots, Chris, and you know, absolutely loved it as a kid. You know, it's very different to, you know, other types of movies that I was watching, like, you know, like the sci-fi movies and stuff like that. But yeah, I had a lot of fond memories of this one. How about yourself, Chris?
Yeah, I think I got into this through my old man watching it on TV. Like, say, my nan and granddad always watched it. And this is actually Clint Eastwood's highest grossing movie of all time, Dave. Mm. And both movies are in, the second one, Any Which Way You Can, are in the top 250 movies grossing of all time because of inflation. So it's a $5 million budget. It's made $104 million in 1978. So I remember it being huge, this. And everyone in my family had this on copy video, without doubt. You know, they'd get it off of ITV or BBC. And we used to just watch it on a loop all the time. So, yeah, I can't pinpoint when it was. Obviously, 78. I probably started watching this maybe mid-80s, 86, 87, but I've seen this loads of times, Dave. I'd probably say 20 to 30 times, not in the Chris Phelps wheelhouse of hundreds, but definitely enough to recite it. And there's quite a few things that are on my YouTube sort of cycle when I go on one of them meandering Friday night specials when I'm Prosecco'd up, Dave. And it always ends up with this sort of movie, Smokey and the Bandit. Because I do like a bit of country and western, Dave, music and that. So this is it almost feels like a Burt Reynolds type movie in some respects.
See, music wise, Chris, I cannot stand country and western. Little Blues Brothers, not
which one though, Dave?
So I really don't like it. And you know, we both watched a bit of the second one as well. And there's one that Sandra Locke's singing, and it's just been this earworm in my head, and it's been doing my head in. And I can't shake it at all, but yeah, just not a big fan. But like I say, around this time in the kind of late 70s, early 80s, we did have this glut of, you know, these redneck West Coast movies, didn't we? I didn't know it was that at the time. But, you know, maybe, Chris, it's movies like this which are responsible for our obsession of the US, you know, when we're growing up and we've seen this, you know, it's just, like you say, Smokey and the Bandit as well. Like, so apparently, you know, someone had passed this to Clint Eastwood and said, oh, this is, you know, Burt Reynolds' next movie. And it was like, oh, right, maybe I'll do this comedy thing. You know, maybe I'll give it a go. So this was intended for Burt Reynolds. And you can really feel it, can't you? You've got all the things in there for, you know, like another Smoking Bandit. You got the bar fight, you know, just everything about it. It feels very much like, you know, in that same space as Smoking and the Bandit. But yeah, just, it is a funny one. I'm going to keep my powder dry on what I actually think until we get into it. But yeah, it was definitely, this is what I thought the US was. I thought the US was basically California. That's how I saw it.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And I think, like, Clint's nearly 50 when he does this movie. He's still in great shape. Obviously, he looks great in this. And it's, everyone advised him not to do this movie, Dave, but financially, it was such a success. And commercially for it, like financially, commercially, same thing, but it made so much money for him, his profile. It's ridiculous. And it wasn't one of his better movies, shall we say. You know, he was critically, it was panned. It's on 39% Rotten Tomatoes. I know it's a retro review, but anyway, it's where you can's on like 15%, Dave, which I like the second one. And I actually watched them back to back when we, you know, I watched this and we were talking about, you watched it pretty much the same time as me. And then, you watched it before me. And then I went straight into the second one, but I did get to the end and I sort of like give up at the second fight. I was like, well, I know what's going to happen. I was about 10 minutes from the end. I don't need to do that. I was doing things, but I was sort of like, oh, you just sit there and watch it. So yeah, there's a lot to be said, Dave. And obviously it's 44 years old and I can say that. Same year. Dave, so I was actually a month old when this came out, Dave, but I don't remember my old man. Yeah. I wouldn't take me to the cinema to watch it. So.
Very good. Now, Chris, should we get into our trailer?
Let's go.
Oh, raining again.
You want to do something this evening?
Of course. Well, not this evening. It's raining now. I want to get out now.
How about taking in a new movie?
Okay. What'd you have in mind?
Hey, babe, what do you think of Clint Eastwood?
Oh, I think of him a lot.
His squirrel's ripping off peanuts, ain't you, squirrel?
Can you imagine Clint Eastwood punching out a wise guy or laying out a bunch of guys who get out of line?
Well, of course I can.
Can you picture him falling hard for a sweet young thing who's got her eye on him?
Oh, sure, that's easy.
How about him fighting for money?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Can you see him allowing a woman to beat up on him?
Oh, now you're putting me on.
In my thoughts, you're always with me.
Well, what do you think of Clint Eastwood confiding his deepest, darkest secrets to an orangutan?
When it comes to sharing my feelings with a woman, my stomach just turns to royal gelatin.
Well, what do you think now?
Now you're really kidding me.
It's no joke. It's Eastwood like you've never seen him before. In a new film called...
Every Which Way But Loose, you turn me. Every Which Way But Loose. Inside, the fire's burning me. In my mind, you just keep turning me.
There can't be too many guys driving around this valley with an ape.
Every Which Way But Loose. Baby, there's no excuse.
Hey, you like to fight?
Oh, I used to. Better than anything. Well, almost.
Inside, the fire's burning me. In my mind, you just keep turning me.
Oh, stop that, you baboon. No respect, no privacy.
Every Which Way But Loose.
Every Which Way You Look, there's action, adventure, and fun. Clint Eastwood will turn you.
Every Which Way But Loose.
Philo is a truck driver living in San Francisco. He lives in a small house with an orangutan named Clyde and his brother Orville and his mother. Philo makes money on the side as a bare-knuckle fighter. He is often compared to the legendary fighter Tank Murdoch. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, Dave, I've got to say, I love the theme tune. You know, I did sort of do a bit of singing last week when the trailer was on, you know. It always remembers the start of it. The helicopter's following Philo's like truck. He's going down the street, you know, and he goes into this bar and he's, you know, the guy's there, I think it's Big Al, and he's chatting some shit and he comes and starts taking the nuts, doesn't he? Which, to be fair, Dave, when I was a kid, I used to think, this guy's a knob, but he's being a bit disrespectful, Clint, isn't he? He's actually taking some bloke's nuts off a bar. That sounds really fucking the wrong way. He said it, but... The guy's like eating pistachio nuts or whatever in it, and he comes and gets a half a pint, drinks it quick, and then he is leaning over into it. And then eventually the guy goes, put him back. And then you get that like moment where the other bloke goes, oh, I'm going, I'll leave you to it. And then Clint puts his arm up like his muscle and just chins him. But when you watch the fighting, obviously it's Clint doing it with this guy, but the guy's punches are so telegraphed. Clint Eastwood's or Philo's already looks ducks below before the guy's even threw the punch. You know, the proper telegraph, but it's that up close camera of like a fight. So obviously Clint does, well, he does all his stunts in this, all the fighting ones anyway, definitely. But I know the story so well, but this is a long film, everyone. It's like nearly 2 hours long, and it's definitely half an hour too long in the day. There's two, even now I can say this hand on heart, that I enjoy it because it's so familiar and I've watched it so many times, but I hate Sandra Locke in it. I hate Lynn Halsey Taylor, his love interest. I've always hated her in it. She pisses me off. I think she's a terrible actress and her character's fucking shit. But yeah, anyway, that's how I feel at the start, Dave. So what about yourself?
Story, you say? We're going to put a pin in that one. So I think the opening there, what I found funny, there's a guy in the background. So when he's flexing his biceps like Popeye or something there, the guy in the background was one of the actors from The Walking Dead. And he looks old in this movie. It's like, how are you still going? I don't know how I feel about the nuts, to be honest, Chris, because they're fucking free nuts, aren't they, on the bar? So I don't know. Obviously, he's just set up to show he's a bit of a hard ass, isn't he? You know, I mean, this is your big machismo fucking movie, isn't it? You know, straight out of the 70s. But, I mean, he gets up. So, I mean, I guess he'd eaten all of his nuts, maybe. That's why he's gone and nicked someone else's. So maybe it was a bit off. But, you know, sit yourself down, mate.
Yes.
But, yeah, like you say, it's funny with Eastwood, because I think considering he's nearly 50, he does look in good shape. But some of the longer shots, he does look like a middle-aged bloke. You know, he's got that middle-aged paunch, hasn't he? Got a bit of a belly, because it doesn't matter what he's wearing, Chris, there's always the same fucking pair of jeans, whether he's wading through a pond or fucking out for a jog.
Yeah
It's the same pair of jeans. And maybe a cowboy hat as well. But yeah, like you said, I honestly don't know how much I like this. You know, in terms of an actual movie, I think this is pretty fucking terrible, to be honest. Because there is no story. There's no fucking plot. There's nothing that really happens at all. So, but with that said, as you were saying, because it's so familiar, it's kind of enjoyable as well, because I'm watching it and I'm expecting things to happen that are actually from the sequel, then I'm like, oh, when's this going to happen? I'm always waiting for something to happen while still being very familiar.
Yeah, and I will say, Dave, yes, I agree with that. What there is in this movie is these set pieces that I remember really well that I enjoy, but the story is so fucking thin. So the whole premise of it is, obviously, we've got Clyde, the orangutan, we've got Orville's brother, and we've got his mum. His mum's trying to pass a driving test, and she's always failing because of her age. And then you've got this situation where they go into the bar, Clint does, you know, Orville, and which is weird. This is a really weird scene. So after the initial bit, he punches this guy, then goes into actually having a bare-knuckle fight, doesn't he? And he absolutely nails this guy, absolutely levers this guy.
Untouched, and flawless victory.
Flawless, a street fighter, perfect, you know, he absolutely takes him down. And like, that's how they make the money, because Orville's betting on, you know, on Philo. I love the name of the day, Philo Beddoe. Well, if anyone says to me Philo Beddoe, you'll always remember that name. What a strange name for a movie. You know, it's obviously an American-type name.
It should Philo, be called great Chip. Name. Or something like that, shouldn't he?
Yeah, Chip Bennett. But yeah, you're right, Philo. So he goes to the first fight, they make some money. Then he goes to the country and western place called the Palomino thing. Now, Dave, there is a Smokey and a Bandit and Cannonball Run link straight away, because Mel Tillis is singing And he's the guy who's got the stutter in the Cannonball Run 1. And he's also in Smoking a Bandit 2 with a stutter. He's in a lot of Burt Reynolds movies. He had a stutter, but he's a country and western singer as well and a comedian. So he's actually singing. So he's one of them people where he can sing a bit like Gareth Gates used to be, Dave, but he actually has a natural stammer, you know, in real life. So, so he's there singing. So I get that straight away. I was like, I know what Mel Tillis is. They're talking away. And then she gets up singing and she comes down and it's like, you know, straight away she comes over. Clint's there, you know, Philo with his cowboy hat on, this big fucking gruff thingy. And she literally just lays it on the lines. She's just like within about 10 seconds. I mean, it's the absolute dream. No wonder we all grew up wondering why the hell we couldn't pull women, Dave, or girls, because Clint does nothing other than smolder. And I love his hair, I've got to say. I always like Clint Eastwood's hair. But he smolders and looks at her. She's like, he gives a lift. He's like, yeah, let's go. But so she's sort of like in the van with him. I love the truck, the old Ford pickup truck. Takes her to the camper site where she's the trailer park. And then she's like, oh, I could come in if you want, but I don't have my boyfriend. Well, yeah, everyone, he's like, whoa, hang on.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah. And it's all, it always, that bit with her, she's like the most annoying person. It's like the theory, and we've just watched Gavin and Stacey. It's like the theory about Gavin and Stacey that everybody in the show and all the fans love everyone in it, but Gavin and Stacey, they love all the other characters, but the main ones. And she's the main person in the movie with Clint. She's fucking rubbish, Dave. I hate her. Honestly, I can't explain what a shit actress she is. And I know Clint was absolutely obsessed with her and they were going out at this point. And I've read something about her being forced to have an abortion, Dave, while they were making this because of the film. That's terrible. So I don't know what the backstory is on that.
Well, so it gets a bit murky, to be honest. Now, I'd be interested. So you say you hate her, right? What is it about her that you hate?
She just fucking, I don't know, Dave, she's just a shit actress and I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but she just fucking annoys me so much. Maybe that's the whole point of the character.
Maybe it's more the character, but I don't know. But, you know, she'd been acting since she starred in The Heart is a Lonely Hunter in 1968. And I think she got a lot of plaudits for that. I'm sure it was that one that she got an Academy Award nomination for or something like that. So she had acting chops. But when she starts coupling up with Eastwood, she basically becomes, it's like Burt Reynolds and Sally Fields, isn't it?
Sally Fields.
It's basically the same thing. So when it all went a bit sour, I think she ended up suing him because she was saying, you know, he was exerting his influence. She wasn't able to get any other acting roles or anything. And then there was some out-of-court settlement, and part of this deal was that Warner Brothers would pick her movies up where she was directing them, but then they never did. So then she sued him again because she was like, this was a sham agreement kind of thing. And it all went really sour. And apparently, you know, he forced her to have this abortion, which she wasn't very happy about. And so, yeah, I think it's just one of those. I dug a little bit into it, but without going too far into it. But it does seem like they were obsessed with each other for a period. And then, you know, it all just went a bit sour.
Yeah, because and that backs up, like, there's another couple of movies I've seen. One of them I've only seen recently was, well, about 2 or 3 years ago, was Clint Eastwood, some sort of bounty hunter, and he's got to protect her, or she's in witness protection in Vegas. And it's a bit like a, you know, bit of an action type one, Dave. It's around this time, though, maybe about 1980. But it's not good. It isn't good. And I like a bit of Clint, Dave. But yeah, I do think this hasn't aged very well, if I'm being honest. For like, there's a lot of stuff we can go back. I know I'm biased for Smoking the Bandit, Cannonball Run, but I can sit there and watch them all day long. Despite these, you know, these holes and silly things going on, there's certainly some appropriate language in them. But with this, I think because I know everyone, and like as kids, oh Dave, you know, like we used to do all the time. You always say to you, like, we had these phrases from movies, like we used to go on about, but the fucking Black Widows, the fucking bikers, like we always used to call them the Shadown bikes. So we used to go Shadown, always said it. We always used to do it to each other. If you saw someone on a Harley Davidson, you go, "There's one of them guys out of the Shadown bikes," because of the song. It's so stupid. But the Black Widows are fucking rubbish. Because I always used to think the leader of the Black Widows was fucking Remember Roy Kinnear, Dave, out of
Wimbledon.
Willy Wonka. Yeah, no. Oh, not Roy Kinnear. Yeah. Oh, what's he called? Finger Kinnear. He died, didn't he? He was in
The big bloke.
Willy Wonka. Yeah. See, I'm sure it was Roy Kinnear.
It could have been.
What's his name? Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean, though. Finger
Kinnear. Is that Bobby Kinnear who managed Wimbledon?
No, I think it was Roy Kinnear, Wimbledon as well. But yeah, he always reminded me of him. And he's just, there's just comedy, aren't there? The Harley Davidson, like the Black Widows, they're fucking useless. So he runs into him and they throw a cigarette, don't they, in the van. And Philo's just like, fuck that, we are on. And I can never understand with that. He chases him on the Harley Davidson and then he gets on a fucking, like a paint machine and sort of chases him as they're running. They fall off the bikes and they're running to the train and he's in this machine going like 2 miles an hour with Clyde next to him and then ends up chasing him and falls over at the train thing and then obviously he nicks the bikes and crushes him. But that whole interaction is just ridiculous. And then you've got obviously, I love the thingy scene though, Dave, when Sandra Lott's there and he takes her again from the bar and they're in that fucking diner and the two Black Widows are there coming over and he's like, shall we go outside? Now the one who looks Native American, he's actually was a professional bodybuilder.
Yeah,
baby.
I saw that.
He's in nails him. He's actually quite a tough guy, but it's when he stands up and the other ones goes, oh my God, you know, like we've got to go through this now. And you get a fucking pasting outside. So them comedy elements to it are really, and not comedy, but just the silliness of it. American, them sort of movies on the 70s and 80s. But yeah, the fucking plot is as thin as a piece of paper, Dave. It's terrible.
Well, just sticking on that diner scene, I mean, I think that is the comedy, isn't it? You know, so the fact that the Black Widows are utterly shit. They're basically, you know, going around like they're this hard Hell's Angels group, but they're just ridiculous. And when the guy lifts his T-shirt up to show him the Black Widow's tattoo, and it's obviously drawn on felt tip or something. It looks shit. Yeah, but he's got these weedy little arms. He's about 50. It's like fucking hell. But how many other times in your life have you played up this hard ass role and, you know, it's gone well for you? Because you've got Sandra Lock there. They've tried to buy, or Lindsay Hall Taylor, or whatever her name is. Lynn Halsey Taylor.
Lynn Halsey Taylor.
You've got her. But she's sat with two other blokes. So if you're going to buy her a drink, you're expecting a tangle, aren't you? You know, but the fact that he's this weedy little shit, you know, it just makes it ridiculous. But I did like, when I was a kid, I did like the fact that Orville, I liked his character in this quite a lot. But the way the big bodybuilder bloke shows his tattoo and he's like sneezes on it, you know, for some reason I thought that was funny as a kid. But again, I just struggled with this. And just going back a little bit as well, we were talking about when they were in the bar, when he meets her. And just before that, I mean, he's just trying to chat up this college girl who's obviously, she's played up to be this snooty college kid because she's doing a study on country and Western culture or something like that. Philo's a fucking knob though, isn't he? Because he just literally invades her space, comes and starts to chat her up. She's clearly not interested. And what is Orville doing carrying around a pair of fucking dentures? Whose dentures are those?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's so bad. I mean, the mums, it's so bad.
It's like, so she's spurned your advances, so you think you'll drop some dentures in her chow. You know, it's like fucking horrible.
Yeah, and the thing is, Clint's, he looks about 40. We know he's nearly 50. He looks about 40. The girl's like, I'm a major. So she's like early 20s or something. Yeah. And he's just like, yeah, that's skated over very quickly. But what I would say about the plot and watching it now, and even though I've watched it loads of times, was the fact that basically Lynn Halsey Taylor is a hustler, isn't she? Her and her boyfriend, who we only see at the end, Skyler, whatever he's called, whatever his name is, they're basically going round and hustling guys. So Philo falls for her, trades in the Black Widow bikes that he'd got off them two guys at the start, gives her money, buys her this horrendous fucking Elvis Presley fucking wannabe jumpsuit, which is absolutely terrible. But then she fucks him off, and you see like these odd scenes here and there where she just disappears, where she's like meets a guy at a bowling alley. And I'm like, is she sleeping with him? What's going on here? Then there's another guy. But it doesn't explain it very well at all. And then Clint decides, because he says he's from Colorado, that, well, Philo, he decides he's going to go and find her and goes on this road trip from nowhere, which is just like, I don't think he's even slept with her if he slept with her once. He's all in on her. Yeah. He's like, right, that's it, I'm in. And they go on this adventure and he ends up having a fight. And the guys, and then they pick up Beverly D'Angelo, who she's working at a
fruit stand or something, isn't it?
A fruit stall, a green grocer's. And all it takes is a little word from fucking Orville. And she gets in the middle of the truck with him and goes, oh, fuck this, I'm giving up my life and going on this adventure with two fucking grapes in her hand or whatever she's got. It's fucking ridiculous.
It's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, again, I'm looking back at it now. I'm thinking, well, the comedy is very light, isn't it? There's not much real laugh out loud stuff, but it is utterly ridiculous. It was a good surprise. Because I'd watched this probably way before, I say way, maybe a few years, but in my kid's mind at that time, you know, it's a lifetime kind of thing. So you watch that way before you watch the European Vacation and National Lampoons and everything. I didn't recognize her. I didn't join up that she was in this movie. So it was a good little surprise there when I saw her come in. But again, I felt it was, again, ridiculous. It's like, Chris, in Cannonball Run, where they go to kidnap her and then she's all in on the race.
It's a parafossi. Yeah.
But yeah, because of the... I think the helicopter shots, you know, so when they're filming the on the road stuff, it gives it that Smokey and the Bandit feel. But with that one, you know that they're trying to get across America with this, you know, bootleg beer, this Coors beer. Coors, Chris, fucking massive back then, wasn't it? I didn't realize, yeah. But it was in this as well. But for most of it, it's like, well, are they just driving around the same town? Because they keep running into the same fucking people.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, and it was only watching it this time, I'm like, oh, right, you're a fucking psycho then. So you basically like this girl and you're trying to drive up to Colorado. I mean, that is a fair fucking drive, that is. So, yeah, I was a bit confused watching it this time. Because obviously when you're a kid, you're not really bothered too much about the story. And it's a good job, really. The film is better if you don't think about that story. But it wasn't obvious to me that she was sort of scamming him. You know, and that's kind of what she did. It was only literally watching it this time. I didn't really understand what was going on when I was a kid watching this, to be honest.
No, and absolutely agree with you, Dave, 100%. And I think, because this is the context of when they're in the, before he has the fights with him in the diner, the bikers, she's talking again about this infamous Tank Murdoch and, you know, unbelievable fucking fighter. You know, he beat up all these people and blah. She's telling all these stories and they're just sat there overlooking like Philo. But you're right. What I didn't realise, Dave, because she's scamming him, I didn't realise, again, it's not very well explained, but the bikers sort of track down and follow Philo. They go to his house, don't they? And his mum ends up pulling the shotgun out and fucking, how she doesn't kill any of them, I don't know. But wherever they go, the Black Widow's bikes end up losing a bike. Whatever scenario they're in, they lose a bike somewhere. It gets blown up, destroyed, whatever. And they end up then going to Colorado themselves. So when they go to the town, so Philo goes for a run, again, like you said, Dave, same white shirt, jeans. He just puts a pair of Adidas trainers on and then he's fine to run in his jeans. He passes Lynn. She's like, oh, you know, oh, shit. Carries on driving. And then when she gets in the town, I never realised this at all until, I mean, to be fair, it's only because I'm reading the plot, but she actually gives him up to the bikers, doesn't she? And I never knew, I've never ever correlated that, because the leader of Black Widow goes, do you know Philo Beddoe? And she's like looking at him. like, you know, and all this, and they have a bit of a dialogue, and then it goes off, and I never ever associated that scenario with her, yeah. You know, that she'd offered him up, because when he gets back into the little town they're in, obviously the guy, the leader of the Bat Widow, says to him, he goes, you know, Philo Beddo, and then he has a massive scrap with about 15 blokes, doesn't he?
He basically becomes Bruce Lee, doesn't he?
Yeah, he absolutely just nails everyone, doesn't he? He absolutely just takes everyone down. But yeah, it's very strange. It's very interesting that how that happens, because I think you're absolutely correct, Dave. It's not explained in any of the dialogue, in the directing. It's really off for me. I'm totally with you. I found that real strange. And the fact that I've had to actually research that to go, that must be true. That's wrong, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it must be there somewhere in the dialogue or something, but it certainly isn't obvious. And like I say, that's why I always thought they were just in the same location. Okay, they were driving around, but they were driving around in the same town. I didn't actually realize they were heading off up to Colorado, which is fucking miles away. And like you say, how did the bikers know he was there? I have to say, I thought Ruth Gordon, she was possibly my favorite character in it, but apart from Clyde, of course.
Yeah.
But I was reading up. Unfortunately, she passed away in 1985. I mean, she was pretty old, but I was looking her up. Chris, she was born in 1896.
Jesus.
I think she might be the oldest actor that we've seen in any of these movies that we've covered. I mean, it's literally...
She was 82 in this then. Jesus, yeah. Christ.
She's a good few years away from the First World War. What a life.
That's fucking mad, that, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah. I'd be interested if we've covered anything with an older actor than that, but it just looks wrong, if you know what I mean. 18 something, like we're watching a movie that we recognize from our childhood, but she was born in, you know, the previous century. It's mad.
Fucking hell. Well, that's two centuries ago now, Dave. But
we've got those nostalgic thoughts from it, you know, and it was someone born, like I say, before the previous two world wars. Bonkers. Wow.
That is bizarre. What a life she led. And I think you're right. She's a great character in it. She's always memorable. And I think after this big scrap, Philo ends up sort of getting in the truck, doesn't he? You know, Beverly D'Angelo's character comes and they get in the truck and drive off. And then
Before we get on to and then, can you help me understand why Orville, so he's in that truck and he's gathering up the bikes and he's putting them in the trash. Right? Could you help me understand why he gets out of a perfectly good truck and starts legging it?
Legging it, yeah. That can go full speed and just starts running. I don't know.
Even if it's a fucking milk float, I'm pretty sure it can go faster than you can run.
Well, they're not exactly in shape, are they?
Yeah.
But I don't know, Dave. We'll just go with that one. But you're right, because he lifts up the Harley Davidsons and throws them. He could just put his boot down, couldn't he? Or he could turn around and run him over if he was that fucking bothered. But yes, I don't know, David. I knew you were going to say that, because I was at this time thinking, why has he just done that? That doesn't make any sense at all, does it? You're not going to give away the advantage you've got in a situation like that, but he does. But yeah, you're right. And from there, it sort of calms down a bit. But then Philo does run into Lynn, doesn't he? And it comes and she calls him like a fucking dumb cowboy. She went, is that, you know, the dumb cowboy? And then you see Kyler, whatever his fucking name is, a boyfriend. And then Then she attacks him, doesn't she? Like, you see, like, a proper lay into him. She just, because he says, like, you know, I'm the only man who thing you outside your bed or something. Basically saying, like, you know,
who wants more from you than what's in your bed or something like that. Yeah.
And that made her erupt, didn't it? And she just started scratching him, punching him, everything. And that was, like, basically, that was the end of it, wasn't it? And I was like, you bitch. I think you're right, Dave. Maybe it's because she plays unlikable, and that's why I don't like her. Maybe it's that. I don't know what bugs me, but all that leads into is the final act. So the elusive Tank Murdoch is having a fight with Philo, and he's going to have a fight. Now, I've got to say, Dave, Tank Murdoch, so we've heard about this, you know, this fucking mystical guy, this like absolute animal that everyone aspires to. He's the number one bare-knuckle fighter in that side of America or whatever. We've had little bits of dialogue from Lynn, other people mentioning him, blah, blah, blah. People he's fought, Philo's fought have mentioned him and stuff like that. And when we see him, he's like 60 with black or brown dyed hair.
He's got a proper granny tint, hasn't he?
Yeah. He looks like he's never had a fight in his life. And you're like, surely you could have got somebody who measured up to same as Clint. Or if it goes by a proper movie, someone bigger than Philo. You know, someone who looks imposing. I know people weren't into bodybuilding like they are now in these movies. You know, you're not going to get a Vin Diesel as a baddie or whoever, you know, like The Rock or someone humongous. But there is bigger people out there now. Like, and I'm surely at this point they could have got someone who looked half decent, because as soon as you see him, he even over goes, oh yeah, he's a bit of a fat, you know, a bit of a chubby or paunchy or something, he says. And it's like, this is supposed to be, I know muscles don't win you fights, Dave, I know that, but in movies, the bigger the bad guy is, the tougher they are. That's how it was years ago, wasn't it? And this is a complete mismatch. Philo Beddoes doing all these runs, he's lifting fucking cars on his own, Dave. He lifts that car up, doesn't he? On his own, and he's doing all these things, like he's dead muscly and that, and it's just like he's fighting, he's had loads of fight, and then you've got this fucking bloke there who looks like he's just, I don't know, like he's got his retirement home from his last payday. He's so fucking ridiculous.
He looks like Bernard Manning just on his just on his way to the bingo.
That's a great reference, that name.
I agree. I'm sure they could have got someone better. You know, the person that they cast, they had to be older. But this guy, there's nothing about him other than he's a bit on the heavier side. There's nothing about him that's particularly, you know, it doesn't look like he's been in all these fights or anything. But you're like, okay, well, maybe when we get into the fight, if he uses weight as an advantage, maybe we're going to see something here. But Chris, that fight was terrible. The fight choreography in this is not good. I mean, you can appreciate the fact that, you know, he is doing all of his own stunts. So there's no cutaways. There's no Treat No Surrender 3 where it just goes to a long shot and it's clearly a different guy. It is Clint in there doing all of these boxing moves and stuff. But when Philo looks around and the crowd are a bunch of turncoat bastards, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, bro, come on.
They're like, fuck it. You know, he's getting his ass kicked and they're all like, oh, you washed up, you finished. And then Philo's thinking to himself, you can see he's looking around, he's like, is this the life that I want to lead? Because everyone's been building me up. I'm going to be the next Tank Murdoch. But is this the life that I want to lead? And then so he just basically sticks his chin out, you know, gives it, offers it up. And the knockout punch, Chris, is so ridiculous. It's from a guy who has never thrown a punch, an actual punch in his life, because he's kind of throwing it as if he's throwing a baseball. You know, he's not, you know, properly punching him. It's like if he connects with that punch, he's going to hit him with the tops of his fingers, you know? And it's just, it looks ridiculous, but then he goes down, doesn't he?
Yeah, and you're right, because, you know, Philo's absolutely nailed this guy, and it's to the point where he looks punch drunk and he's trying to throw. And like you say, it's just ridiculous because there's all these people screaming, but for some reason, Philo picks out the ones going, oh, yeah, you know, take him. Tank, you know, this is the new Tank Abbott and all this. And and it's like, but the whole pretense of Philo is he's not trying to be the best, but he's just trying to earn some fucking money side hustling. Yeah. You know, I don't know what else he does really. He's just sort of fixed his car. So I don't know whether he's purely, I mean, Orville is a, you know, he's sort of recovery thing. Obviously, he's a driver, a truck driver as well, isn't he? Sorry, yeah, he's a truck driver. But Orville does his like car recovery things and that. And Philo's doing this whole side hustle. But surely you would, if you were trying to make money off fighting, you would want to be known as the best. Because even if you get beat, you're going to get paid because everyone's going to want to fight you. The best are going to come and see you, so which generates more money. That's the pretense. But from nowhere, this whole plot device just comes from nowhere that he wants to be, you know, he doesn't want to ruin Tank's legacy, and he does, and also, well, I don't know if it's about that, but he just doesn't want to be Tank Murdoch, and it's like that has not shown its head in any of the fucking movie that we've just been watching. That he's got this conscience, does he? If someone fucks with Philo, he just chins him, just punches him. He fucking levers, like, you know, is it the first one with the copper when he absolutely nails the coppers? This one, isn't it? I've watched them back to back now, isn't it?
Oh, we've skipped over that bit. It is the coppers, because
it
says,
the coppers,
call the cops. They are the cops. And then they fucking decide that they're going to... Chris, it looks to me like they're going to go and fucking murder Philo.
Because they take
some medical leave, as they say, and then they go off. And then he's basically there. He's there with his fucking shotgun while Clint's fishing. And then you get this comedy moment where he's, you know, he's like, oh, you need to reel it in like this. And then he slaps him across the face with the fish. And I'm like, were these cops actually going to murder him?
Yeah. It's so bad, isn't
it? I forgot about that bit.
Yeah, because at the end he passes the, you know, the Black Widows and they're fucked, aren't they? The leader's like putting the tricycles. But then the cops are there in that fucking pickup truck. And that is absolutely full of weeds because it's in the sea. In the sea, it was in the lake. I didn't even see that bit. It's basically been rescued and they're all looking as if say, yeah, we don't want to mess with Philo. But Dave, I've got to say, watching it this time, it is a long old slog, this movie. Yeah. A long old slog. And the fight scenes do not stand up very well, I don't think, if I'm being honest. I still enjoy it, but they just don't stand up.
No, I'd agree with you. I just think that I can get why, as a kid, watching this in and around that time as well, you had the likes of Smokey and the Bandit. We've done Hooper, haven't we, from the same year as this one. Grossed a little bit higher, this one, than Hooper did. I can see why I enjoyed it back in the day, but watching it this time, I'm just scratching my head thinking, how did you get away with making this as a movie? And it made so much money. It boggles my mind. But I'm glad you picked this one. I'm glad, you know, it was great to go back to a movie that meant so much to me as a kid. But yeah, this is one that's probably in the pile of hasn't aged that well.
Just a little bit. Anyway, Dave, shall we get into our scores?
Let's go.
So, Dave, I can only apologise for picking this one again. You know, I've not done myself because I do enjoy this movie, but it's a real slog, guys, honestly. And the second one, as I said before, I went straight into the second one, and that's what, they're both 1 hour 55, and I'm like, why? Fucking why? But if you enjoyed it the first time round, you've watched it before, I still rate it as a classic, Dave. I still enjoy it. I still enjoy the characters. Philo Beddoe is just a mean... motherfucker, you know, he's got morals, you know, but there is something there. There's so many things I remember as a kid. I can't knock it down that much, Dave, as much as what I've said about it, and the plot is terrible, and the fact that it's just based on a hustle and Philo just wants to go and fucking get his end away, this woman he's become obsessed with, it's just bizarre, but we go with it. So I'm going to put it right in the middle, Dave, Hill Valley. I'll still watch this, I know I will, but it might be a few years yet before I go back to it properly. But yeah, what a strange movie, I've got to say, even though I loved it as a kid.
Yeah, so I'm not disappointed that you picked this at all. I'm glad it does have that classic feel. It has that point in time feel of the late 70s, early 80s for sure. But I was surprised at how well I didn't... I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy it, because I enjoyed... I enjoyed the feelings that I remember having about the movie more than watching the movie itself, if that makes any sense. But yeah, I agree. It was a real slog. But also, you know, you'd mentioned to me that you went through and watched the second one. I thought, oh yeah, maybe I should do that, because there's all these missing pieces that I was expecting. And sure enough, you know, sticks on the second one, and there's the right turn, Clyde. There's the fight scene with the where Clyde's, you know, just stood there and fighting with everyone. Chris, the first time I fell asleep And then I woke up and it was about two-thirds of the way through. I thought, oh, fuck, I only made it like 15 minutes in or something like that. So I rewound it back, made it about halfway through again. And I was like, oh, fuck this, I'm wasting my life. This is shit. I was like, look, if we have to watch it for the podcast, I'll watch it. But fucking hell, stop wasting your life. So yeah, the second one is basically the same. It offers not really a lot that's any different to this. And yeah, I just think it's not stood up at all for me. But even though I can appreciate and say, look, it is this point in time thing, I think for me, Chris, I'm going to go even lower than that. I think I'm going to go to Elm Street with this one. I think if you have got nostalgic love for this movie from being a kid and watching it and growing up with it, and you know, you like this time in Burt Reynolds, in Clint Eastwood's career, I think you can absolutely still get enjoyment out of this. And it is basically a series of sketches more than an actual plot that gets you through. If you've never watched it before, I can't recommend this at all. There's just nothing really redeemable about it, I don't think. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. So yeah, Elm Street.
Right. So we'll go with that, and I appreciate that, Dave. Now, it's your pick next. Now, you've said all this, Dave, and you fucking slated one of the greatest actors and directors of all time, Mr. Clint Eastwood. Now, I may have done this to you, Dave, when you've gone down a rabbit hole, and this, for once, is not my pick, and you'll understand why, guys, in a minute. So, David, what are we going to review next?
So what this is, Chris, this is a coming together of a number of factors. So I think we've done a couple of Lauren Avedon films, haven't we, recently? What was it? Manhattan Chase and Deadly Ransom.
Done about six.
I think it might even have been that one where I was looking at some of his filmography and I spotted this one. I can't remember whether we were recording or not, but I spotted that it had Lauren Avedon in it. It had Cynthia Rothrock in it. It had Bolo. You know, it had all these people. And when I looked at the trailer, I was like, this is actually not bad. And I was looking at that. And then I was looking at some of the films that we'd done a couple of years ago, some of the ridiculous ones, like, you know, Snake in the Monkey's Shadow. And the fact that I've just picked, my last pick was Goodfellas, a proper, proper classic. And we both loved it. And I thought, you know what? The time is all just right for this. It's perfect to go back to this one. Proper stitch up classic VHS pick. This one, Chris, is called Tiger Claws 3. Now let's get into the trailer.
In New York, a crime lord resurrects 2,000 year old warriors.
That's it.
In order to take over the city. Only two detectives stand in their way. Now, they must convince a martial arts master to teach them how to defeat the ultimate evil.
Not that trailer going.
Yeah.
China's Carter Wong, Joelle Mary, and former undefeated female world kickboxing champion Cynthia Rothrock star in the most exciting and action-packed installment in the Tiger Claw saga. Tiger Claws 3.
Now, Chris, I do have to say that there are obviously two previous to this, and Cynthia Rothrock is front and center of all three. But the fact that this one does have the Avedon in it, I thought, oh, I'm going to have to pick this one. And having had a sneaky peek already, I think it's going to deliver.
Well, can I just say, Dave, you know, the podcast has been going now. This is 3 or 4 years we've been going now with the podcast. So, let's be honest, Dave. we have got some of the greatest actors of all time. And I think because we've done about four or five Stallone movies now. We did Cobra and Rocky V back to back. Nighthawks, we've had Rocky IV, Rocky III. You know, so we've done a few Stallone ones. Fair enough. We've done, you know, Michael J. Fox is in there, not renowned as a world-class actor, but, you know, Back to the Future and that, no problem, Dave. Al Pacino, De Niro.
Brian James.
Kiefer Tarley. This is our seventh Lauren Avedon movie, Dave.
Oh, my word.
Seven. So we've got all three. Oh, no, sixth, because he's not in No Retreat, No Surrender 1, is he? So he's six.
No
Retreat, Surrender 2 and 3. King of the Kickboxers is number 3. Deadly Ransom is 4. Manhattan Chase 5. And this is 6. Wow, Dave. Wow. And it's not even me who's picked it. I can't get told off this time. We're picking him again. But, Dave, and we're going to have watched two Lauren Avedon movies within the space of 2 months, Dave.
He has no idea, does he? He's got this little corner of the internet, this little shrine to Lauren Avedon.
If he never listens to us, Dave. I can't wait for this. The trailer looks sensational, Dave. I cannot wait.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, what a start in New York.
Right. Thank you, Dave, for that. I cannot wait. Big thanks to everyone, as always. Absolutely brilliant stuff, guys. If you want to email us, thevhsstrikesback@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on social media, @VHSStrikesBack. If you do get a chance, please drop us a review, by the way, as well, on your podcast catching app as well. Anything good or bad, it doesn't matter. Me and Dave will read it out. Absolutely brilliant. And if you do want support, get over to patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback. So just before we do the roll call of honor, Dave, we've had an email.
Oh, nice.
So this one's we actually got this today. So we got this one from Mark. It's not anyone asking for
Kung Fu lessons or
Kung Fu lessons, surf lessons.
What was the other one, surfing?
Male gigolo lessons. None of that, Dave. No, this is a genuine email. And Martin Simperport, love it. Hey, guys, hope you're well. Well, I stumbled across your podcast because I was actually looking for a Mike Bassett England manager soundtrack for some strange reason, but so excited that there were two people who were talking about it and love it as much as I do. I love the airport scene. I always think that's how our international teams act these days. I'm starting to work my way through all your shows and going back to watch them again to see what you both see. Just brilliant from you both. It's a happy accent I found you both. Keep up the great work, Martin. So that's a lovely email that day. Really good.
That is awesome. And actually, we do have a review as well, Chris. So this one is from P. Miller and it says, pure nostalgic fun. Just got into this podcast and it's a great listen. Just picking out episodes relating to movies that I like and have heard of from a time when video rental was an enjoyable part of my life. I love the banter between the hosts. Very funny stuff, whilst also full of great facts. 5 stars. So that's a bit of a change from the previous one, wasn't it?
Yeah, we don't know anything.
This is rubbish. these have no idea and seem to like taking the piss out of the movies.
How dare them do that? Yeah, absolutely brilliant. But Dave, no, honestly, really, really good stuff, mate. And a big thanks to everyone out there. And honestly, I've absolutely loved it today, Dave. But the main thing I've took from this whole movie is, how are you going to take us out today, Dave?
Well, thanks for that, Chris. You see you next Tuesday. Now, there are some lines in here. You know, there is also some story. I don't know how many of them are great, but I'm going to pick one and I'm going to attempt a bit of a Clint. So, I'm not afraid of any man, but when it comes to sharing my feelings with a woman, my stomach turns to royal gelatin.
Fucking Laurence Olivier, Dave. Amazing.
I think I went off into a bit of northern again there, but it turns into royal gelatin, it does. Anyway, thanks for that, Chris. It has been so much fun today, and thanks to everyone out there for listening, and we'll speak to you next time.
Bye.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now?
What are we going to do? Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back. That's annoying.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Ring the bell.
All right. Ding, ding.
Bust you up. Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Come on. Ain't so bad. Ain't nothing.
You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid fool.
Yeah, maybe you're
stupid.
Crazy
something.
They ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months.
I must break.